Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, hello. Kellen Patterson of the O'Kellen Clan. Yes, that Kellen. And I ain't yelling at nobody at Mellon. Just telling. Pay for pay, real talk. Midwest muscle and all of your craniums, cronums, cromagnums, whatever. Anywho, this program is sponsored by P4P Muscle, the number one drug-free sponsorship foundation in all of this sick world. just kidding. And if you are a drug-free athlete and are looking for a solid foundation to stand on and a vehicle to drive your gaze like what, that's all right.
Like a Corona-free Mack truck through ice cream.
Check us out at p4pmuscle.com and Alex Chicheta with a banter. Hello, that's our boy.
Hello. So, it's almost 80 degrees today, Kalen. I don't know what it's doing in your area, but it's nice.
60.
Nice.
60.
People, listener land, what's going on in your area? Is it warm? Do you even know? Have you seen the sun? Let us know.
Have you seen the
Let
sun?
Let us know.
That's
Have you
I
seen
know
the sun?
That's here comes the sun. There
I don't.
There was.
Here comes the sun. And it's all right.
There you go. It's all right.
There it is. Well, folks, Dr. Peter Chahansky, I just pronounce it any way I want today. It's Chahansky.
Dez the Butcher.
He was Dez the Butcher. Carruthers. He is scheduled to be on our show tonight. And I feel like he still might, but he got a nosebleed out of nowhere. And so he's dealing with that. And so once he's finished dealing with that, hopefully we will continue our discussion on cancer, which Blog Talk Radio so rudely interrupted last week by just cutting us off.
Right. Oh, my goodness.
And so we were like talking, and then it said, I don't even know what it said, but something were to effect, your show is over. Good night.
That's right.
That was it.
It was now done.
We've never had it happen. And we were just getting started. We had only gotten through the preliminaries. We were talking about the two schools of thought as to how we get cancer. And we were just getting to the good part on what to do about that, or why do some people get cancer and why do some people do not. And I should have said some people don't. I had a double negative right there. And we were cut off. We didn't even get that far. And now Dr. Peter has a bloody nose. And so we are wishing him well in that little endeavor, and we hope to speak to him soon. But in the meantime, Kalen Patterson, I feel like there's something on your mind.
There's actually three things. So first one I'd like to start with is something pretty simple, because it's something I talked about when I was a kid. It was something I was learning about with smog. You know, it was something that was really devastating. L.A., New York was getting hit with acid rain, and no one questioned that. And I thought that was so different, you know, because people were seeing that their daily habitual routines were affecting the environment, even the air quality that they were breathing. And New York and L.A. were getting hit really hard. And one of the things that they noticed since this shutdown or this lockdown or this quarantine or this day of Rona that seems to last for months is that the air quality has improved as people have been not transporting so much, not doing their daily routines, and not eating up the environment like they normally would, you know, with driving and going about their regular routine. So that was something that's very interesting, and it's basically flying under the window. But they had a radar, and I don't know if you've had a chance to see it, of L.A. 2 weeks before the shutdown, basically 2 weeks into it, and then a month after. And you can see the skyline easily. It's very visible. And it was just something. So I said, well, I wonder what New York is looking like, you know, because they really got the clamps put down on them with so many people dying, and droves likely were dying. And I know people are going to argue this, and guys, I'm not going to get into that. The data's there if you want to take a look at it. You don't have that many mass deaths and nobody getting shot. I mean, it's got to be acquainted to something. So, you know, coincidence is not a mistake if you have that many people. So we're going to just bypass that, guys. This isn't a political debate, and I don't need to do the name calling. But no one is questioning how we talked about it back then, and I know it was a big deal. And there's been many laws that set up regulations to ensure that people had good air quality. The Clean Air Act was one of them. So, you know, you just go to the amendments, go to the laws, you can check it for yourself. But this is something that was pretty much cut and dry back then because no one wanted to put the people at risk. And now it seems more to the point we don't care what happens as long as, you know, we're able to get back to work and do this, that, whatever, without any fear of regulation or worry or concern. So that's one of them. The second one is that this is real. I mean, people's lives are being affected every single day. And the small business owners are being crippled. And I mean just massively crippled as financially as far as what they can do, what they can have happen. And my heart goes out to them. I mean, I personally have helped other gyms in our area set up. And it is, you know, they were like our brother and sister gyms, even though we weren't financially connected in any way. We were just supporting the local gyms and the owners. And to basically help them set up and see them thriving and getting going good and then start expanding. And right during the expanding time, you know, this happened. And then the carpet was pulled from under them, and now they're closing down. And the same people we helped set up, we had to help take down the machines so they could sell them off, you know, some of the parts, so they could pay for the lease. And, you know, I thought, you know, all of this stuff was going to be taken care of. You know, but you know, landlords have to make money just like the people that are in the building. So there's got to be some common ground that should have been done, and it wasn't. And small business owners are taking, just a straight beating over what's going on. And the third thing is this consistent denial that somebody's fudging the data or whatever. And yet you still have people living right next to you in your neighborhoods, your next door neighbor, and all you'd have to do is ask them. And no one simply wants to do it because I think people are truly afraid of the truth in order to keep living their lives. And I'm saddened to say that, but, you know, it's been people that I know personally, one of the elders in our neighborhood that helped raise me, has just passed away from it, and to have his wife quarantined for 2 weeks was just heartbreaking. You know, we were reaching out to and everybody's getting in touch with it, but there's something about being around people and having human contact that is a blessing that we sometimes take for granted. And this is one of those situations where it was basically a plethora of people that were calling as much as we could to stay in touch with it, because I can't even imagine just losing your husband of 50 years and then, you know, basically having to be isolated for 2 weeks with no human contact. So, you know, we have a lot to look forward to in the future. We have a lot that we have to reconsider, especially with what's going on. And this thought of getting back to normal, we have really limited our thinking if we think that normal is what we want to get back to when situations like this keep happening with the normal that we were living back then. There's going to be a new normal, and we'd better start understanding that life is going to have to be filled with adjustments as we move forward. And that's my little rant right there, Des. What do you think?
Well, I think that, you know, I do agree on several of the fronts that you just presented, because there are going to be, anytime there's a tragedy that happens on this scale, there are some adjustments that are going to be made. But to think that life can just continue in this holding pattern as it is, that's unrealistic.
Nope.
And it cannot. And besides the health risks that are out there financially, as Caitlin was saying, with the small businesses and people out of work, the destruction by the situation that we're in just keeps getting larger and larger and larger. And frankly, I, you know, I'm just kind of in awe at how it's being handled when this isn't the first time that we've dealt with a pandemic.
Yes.
But for whatever reason, this one has got everyone, you know, by the hairs on the back of their neck, and nobody quite knows what to do. And we've been through much worse than this without the same kind of ramifications financially. You know, on death-wise, we're on par of what we've seen in the past on different pandemics. But, you know, just the way things continue to be handled, I don't know. Because, A, people cannot continue to live in a state of fear. So if you think that we're never going to see anything like this again, and to stay holed up in your house and your mask and your gloves are going to save you, they're not. They can help slow the spread of things, but a virus is a virus. And if you really want to get a grip on what's going on, you need to understand how viruses work.
Yep.
You know, it's tragic that so many people are dying and so many people's health are being impacted. But I hope that this is a wake-up call for people to appreciate your health.
Yeah.
I said it once, and I'll say it again, and people will say, well, there are people out there that are dying that nothing was wrong with them. You don't know if they had a condition that they didn't even know about.
Right.
And sometimes there are the anomalies. Perfectly healthy people die out of nowhere, it seems like. But the healthier you are, when you are hit with an illness, the faster you're going to recover. The sicker you are, I hate to say it, but the faster you're going to get sicker. And those are the highest percentage of our casualties, not to show disrespect to anyone, but let's keep this in perspective, people, because right now there are also a lot of people in recovering. So do we want to go out and be stupid? No. But do we want to hide in fear in our houses forever and a day? No, because we can't. And so start thinking about realistically, how do we continue to live and thrive given the situation that we're in?
The one parameter that we fail to recognize, especially when there's people we think well of, is that they have an addiction. And there were several people that we've lost. And, you know, the drug addiction just hastened it because the immunity was already lessened. So that's considered, in my mind, a pre-existing condition. But no one can really speak about it at the funeral, because what a time to bring up that topic. You know, that this person had a drug habit or an alcoholic addiction that limited their immunity, because it's already doing a heck of a job fighting off all the disease and hurt and harm we've done personally to our body. It's something that's not good to talk about at the funeral. It's not good to talk about during a time of loss. And so basically all of this conversation will come up months from now, but right now it's just considered a single COVID incident and the person died from that virus.
And the part that I really hate about it all, and only because of the amount of fear that it continues to instill in people that they can't think past the fear, is, you know, every death right now, if someone dies and they even remotely had a symptom, it's being marked as COVID, but it may not have been COVID. It could have been influenza A, which kills thousands. It could have been influenza B, which kills thousands. It could have been who knows what. We don't know if it was truly complications. Well, if it was complications from the COVID-19, that's complications. But was it COVID, C-19, whatever we're calling it today, truly that, or complications from something else, the Rona? Just like nobody ever dies from AIDS, nobody ever dies from steroid abuse. It's always the complications caused by that, but they don't call it that. But in this instance, they're calling it all Corona, even if it might just have been complications caused by the Corona. Because you know what? If you check the numbers, cases of death by flu have plummeted. Same as cases of death by pneumonia. They have plummeted. But you know what cases of death are on the rise? It's all Corona. So if it is Corona, yes, call it what it is. But if they're just classifying that because they still don't have enough information, they still don't truly know how to handle this virus because we're 18 months away from a vaccine. And I am, frankly, I have no faith that the vaccine is really going to do a whole heck of a lot, because who knows what strain of Corona we'll be dealing with then. So, again, beating my dead horse, because if we're going to rant, thinking about what you can do to build your health up as much as you can. So if for some reason you are exposed to the flu, to corona, to whatever is out there, you have given yourself every fighting chance to fight it naturally that you can. And that is going to be your best bet. God made our bodies wonderfully, fearfully. He made them so they could defend themselves against infectious diseases, or at least try. If you are not helping yourself, then you're hurting yourself. So type 2 diabetes, you got it? Get off it. Do what you need to do to improve your health. Eat better. Move. Sleep. De-stress. Since we're all at home, everybody has the opportunity now to work on all of these areas that break down our body instead of building it up. And it doesn't mean you have to change everything overnight, but change something. Improve your habits. Use this time effectively so that you give yourself fighting chance to fight this kind of stuff that's out there. And then if you decide to get vaccinated 18 months from now, your body's in an even better position to fight whatever out there and help the vaccine work, if that's not even an oxymoron. And then go from there. But don't just sit at home, oh, woe is me, I'm going to wear my mask, I'm going to wear my gloves, I'm not going to change my crappy lifestyle, and I'm just going to make everyone else suffer by keeping them unemployed because I want to stay at home, because that's an easy way for me to address this. And I know that sounds callous, and I know that sounds uncaring, but the reality is people are dying, people are unemployed, people can't eat. Instances of spousal and child abuse have gone up because everybody's at home.
Straining,
and all because
stressing,
why?
Stressing.
Because
straining,
we don't
want
to do the basics.
That's right.
We don't want to do the basics to take care of ourselves. To we always say we're in this together, then be in this together, be healthy, and help us get out of this together. That's my thing.
Well, we're going to stay on that because it's a very good point, because there's a lot of anger. I know these people are carrying their weapons around in the streets more often. They're scared of being robbed.
Yes.
For the little
they're rioting.
Yes.
And that's the other thing. We're hurting ourselves. Who is rioting against someone else going to do when it's the government telling us what we can and can't do, unless you think the rioting is going to make them change their minds? But in the meantime, you're hurting your neighbor. You're hurting your neighbor. Get on your telephone. Write them letters. Get on your telephone every day if that's what it takes. But don't hurt your neighbor. Your neighbor can't control this situation.
That's right. Red or blue, you bleed red, and you get blue bruises. So you kind of are an oxymoron in yourself by fighting against the people you can reach, because it's the people you can't reach are the ones that are pulling the string. So We'd better wise up, and, you know, with these protests, you're exposing yourself and the people you care about to the virus that you say doesn't exist, and you're finding out the hard way, just like those kids down in Florida going to the beaches where they thought everything would be hunky-dory, we're all good, and look at what happened because of it. So, you know, if you're not taking the steps to help, you're actually taking steps to hurt, and fighting each other doesn't solve it. And we're one nation under God. When does God play a role in our thinking if all we're doing is fighting? I mean, I can't imagine how he could say, you know, I'm proud of this nation when they're basically doing in-house bickering against each other. One of the things that I had suggested when they were asking, and I thank God that they're finally starting to reach out to the community and try to come up with a method or means to combat what's going on, because like Dad said, if we're sitting at home and nobody's doing their job except for the people that do stay at home, then that's not enough to basically stimulate an economy to bounce back to what's happening. And if you're not coming up with methods, we have plenty of time for our minds to be active. And one of the things that I was thinking about is, when do they come and talk to the small business owner, come and talk to the families, and try to find out a way that can combat you know, financially and the mental stress of this, and come up with a method and means to start dealing with this in a sustainable way. Because what we're doing right now is unsustainable. It is unsustainable. We're just becoming more indebted, and the depression is right next door. People don't understand it.
Mentally,
physically, and financially, there is a depression right around the corner if we don't do something. And I don't want to be looking like the 1920s soup lines, where basically you're getting water with meat flavored water. So let's try to get our minds together and get on a method that builds up a nation. And this fighting is not how that happens. This name calling is not how this happens. This pushing and shoving is not how that happens. Basically taking up arms against your, like Dez was saying, your next door neighbor. It's just shocking that we can live next to each other and still want to take up arms against your next door neighbor. This isn't the Civil War, and I'm shocked that we still have that ideology, as that's somehow going to save or sustain what we're currently dealing with. I went on too long, Dez. I'm sorry.
That's okay, but now that you have come up for air, Dr. Peter has got his nosebleed under control. And I don't know, maybe you need to boil some extra water, get some extra humidity going on over there, Dr. Peter. I don't know what's going on, but I'm glad
I don't
that
either.
It's
really hot out here, too. It's like 86 degrees.
Oh, don't brag. Don't brag.
Oh, is it not hot there as well?
It's cold.
Oh, it's warm, but it's not 86.
There's a
good
warm up, but not us yet.
Oh,
yeah,
it's
79
in my area.
Not even right. We got 61.
Oh, well,
what?
Better than 41.
That's true.
Yep, right. The glass is half full and or can be refilled, whichever way you look at it.
And the nose
right.
is only bleeding without tissue.
You know, they're calling for blood donations, but I wasn't ready for one right now. So I'll have to go back later and do that donation. They're looking for antibodies for the virus. So
they do, and you know what? They're probably going to find a lot of people with it. I mean, it's just my little humble opinion that there's probably more people out there that have this, recovered from it, and didn't even know what it was that they had. So once they get this tested. The testing off the ground, they're probably going to find that.
Well, they did some testing in L.A. County just a couple of days ago. I don't know if you saw this report. They tested 863 people in L.A. County that had not had any symptoms or had any testing. And they found that I believe it was 4.1% of the people that they tested for antibodies. So they had it without knowing.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
if you extrapolate that to the entire 8 million residents, adults that live in L.A. County, they project there was about 320,000 to 350,000 positive cases that nobody knew about.
So if they have antibodies, that means they had it and recovered. So, yeah.
Right. And on the bright side, that will bring the mortality rate to a very low level when you,
yep.
you add all of the people that had it that did not realize it. And I believe they calculated the mortality rate down based on that to about 0.01%.
Yeah.
So
yep.
that's good news.
I mean, it doesn't make the feeling of loss for those who have lost any less, but I hope for the people that are still just really scared out of their minds, it hopes to provide them some comfort that while COVID-19 can be serious, it doesn't mean it's an automatic death wish for those who contracted and that are healing from it, even while we're searching for more medical healing. So there's still positives going on in this situation, even though those stories don't get out very often.
Right. Yeah. It was just in the LA Times just yesterday, I believe.
Yeah.
Good for
all
them.
Right,
I hope they're doing something substantial for all these minds that are just crippled with fear. I mean, I'm tired of people being scared to death because your body just cannot stay at that level and be healthy.
No, not at all. And I've been posting a lot that, you know, quarantine does not mean stay inside. Be on your property if you'd like. Be outdoors. Bolster your immune system. Make some vitamin D. Ground to the earth. You know, maximize your mitochondrial efficiency and maximize your immune defenses. Vitamin A, vitamin D, and vitamin C are vital for these things. And natural light, as opposed to fake light indoors, are much better for not only body but mind.
Amen.
Yes, no doubt. Yeah. No doubt.
Yeah.
So, and those are all good things. So, folks, if listening, I hope that you take that into consideration and really meditate on those things that you can control and can do to, you know, protect your health and those around you by being as healthy as you can be, and then helping them to follow the same practices as far as your family and maybe friends that have interest. If you're, you know, while you're social distancing, you can shoot them a message with all of these tips. So go to Dr. Peter's Facebook page, Peter Chyhonsky. I've been pronouncing your name 20 different ways tonight already.
That's
and
pretty good,
share yeah, some of that information.
Can I just make one, since we're talking about this right now, and I know it's already 4 o'clock my time, almost 4 o'clock. You know, as far as what I just said, let me just give a brief synopsis of how this works. Vitamin A, just to, so people know out there how important it is, vitamin A and vitamin D are fat-soluble vitamins, which means when you take them in, they get stored in your fat. So you don't lose them right away. Like vitamin C and vitamin D flow through your body, so you have to keep taking them throughout the day. But the way vitamin A works is vitamin A, it forms a retinoid. No, vitamin A is called retinol. It forms a retinoid bulletproof vest around each cell so that that cell can be protected. Because the only way a virus can get into your cell is, you know, we know what the COVID-19 virus looks like. It's a sphere with a lot of suction cup-looking things sticking off of it. Those suction cup-looking things are called S proteins, and those are the key for that particular virus to try to find a lock in the host, which is us. And if we can close that lock down, vitamin A is the bulletproof vest that coats your cell to do that. Okay, so that's why vitamin A is important. Vitamin D, as we know, you can make freely from the sun, and you can also take vitamin D, but what vitamin D does is it stimulates your innate immune system, and it produces something called cathelicidins. Cathelicidins are ammunition bullets for your frontline fighters for anything that's attacking it. So those are the bullets that fight for your infantry to fight what is trying to attack you. And so that's why vitamin D, that's one of the big advantages of vitamin D. And then vitamin C, if your immune system is compromised and it's only firing on 4 cylinders instead of 12, those fighters now have to fight a much bigger battle, and they do not have enough warriors to fight. So what they do is they're so outnumbered that they're just firing at will. And the unfortunate part of that when you're compromised is you're firing at your own soldiers as well. And so that's where you'll get a lot of inflammation and internal inflammation, and that's what's happening in the lungs of people who get it in the lungs. They don't have enough fighters with enough ammunition, and the body gets damaged by less fighters trying to fight the battle. So that's the big benefit to those three vitamins. So you're shoring up the front lines, giving them ammunition, and coating and protecting your cells. So I just wanted to get that out there since, you know, we've been talking about it.
No, and I'm glad that you did. Because I think it falls exactly in line with what Kaylin and I have been saying, except,
not as eloquently as you did with as much helpful information. I mean, we've been talking about building up your immune system and really building up your own health so that you can increase your odds, your body's odds, of fighting off something like this when it hits you. And then you just gave them the action items of, all right, vitamin D, get out in your yard, go skateboarding, even if you're 6 feet away, okay, if that makes you feel better. But get access to the sun. Take that light in. You know how important that is. If you've been listening to our past shows about light with Dr. Peter, you can check out the archives. Vitamin A, build up your immune system. Tons of immune boosting foods and things out there. Clean up your health. Clean up your health. You have resources, and I know several of you have more time to figure it out and focus. So do it. And you're just doing yourself and your family and everyone else around you a favor, more so than wearing your mask and wearing your gloves. Yes, that slows down the spread, but you want to be able to fight it off and get over it. So you're one of
the parking
that if they need antibodies, yeah, if they need antibodies, done. Body saw it, tackled it, boom, done.
Done.
That's all I have to say about that.
Bingo.
Done, boom.
Bingo. Yeah, that sounds great.
I love it.
Yeah, doesn't it? But and I also recognize that, yeah, it's probably easier said than done, but you got to start somewhere. You got to start somewhere.
Yeah, if you know. Right, and if you do notice, when you do look at statistics, which I've taken a deep dive into this area, 86% of the people who have unfortunately perished to comorbidities, which means a comorbidity means something wrong with you, has had two comorbidities in common. 86% of the deaths had diabetes and high blood pressure. So along with whatever else they may have had. And also, age is a comorbidity. So we're seeing that older people are succumbing more because they may not have as bolstered an immune system because of that. So it is vitally important, you know, like we've been talking about cancer last week, and maybe we'll touch a little bit today, but those are the things that will bolster your immune system. And if you can use some of the other things, so it is healthy living and healthy lifestyle that will, we have a built-in pharmacy, and people that don't understand this, our pharmacy is in our blood vessels. We have over 10,000 different chemicals and drugs ready to be used by our body for anything that attacks us. And the only problem is most people's pharmacies are not open for business. And your pharmacy has to be open for business in order to not have to pay a mercenary by taking a drug or something else, because your own pharmacy is closed because your immune system is closed.
Yep. I got you. I like it. I like the analogy.
Yeah.
So much good stuff, folks. And it's easier to say, I'm just going to wait for the vaccine, and I'm just going to wait for this, and I'm going to stay, you know, at home. And all of that has its place. But the waiting for help, that's not the way. You have to make your health. Don't wait for it, because if you wait for it, you're never going to get it, or you won't get it to the quality that you could have if you just wait for it to show up in a shot.
Absolutely. And if you have not done any research on vaccinations, I would suggest that you do some research, because since we've gotten the flu shot, has that eradicated the flu?
Nope.
Okay. Do we have to get a flu shot every year, right? Or they want us to?
Yep.
This is not going to be different, because this is a mutation. There's lots of strains that will happen. So I would not place all of my bets in that one egg, because literally a vaccine is going to give you some antibodies for what they put in that vaccine, but that does not mean it's going to be as effective as you want it to be, and it does not mean it's going to – you're not going to have to get another one. When you have – if you've been exposed to this and you have a healthy immune system, you will fly through it like most people have, and then you will develop your own antibodies, which is an instant vaccine. So, but it's specifically for what attacked you. So I would definitely stay absolutely on the health track and immune system bolstering, open your pharmacy, and definitely, you know, that should be a paid mercenary in the end, and you should just use that as an insurance policy.
I like it.
Yep.
All right, guys. We've got about 25 minutes. I don't know how much of our conversation we can get into that, because we just even just scratched the surface last week when we got when Blog Talk Radio said goodbye, and then I got hung up on. We got hung up
right.
on, but we are back. Dr. Peter is back. So basically, where we left off, I feel like is that we talked about there were two camps of thought on how we get cancer. A, it's genetic. B, it's in our mitochondria, because there's some sort of malfunction that's gone on. And if I'm remembering correctly, it's more along the lines of scenario B that kind of dictates who is more prone to get cancer versus those who do not, because everybody is a carrier for the potential of cancer of some sort in our bodies.
Right.
Would that be a fair?
Really what happened, that's fair. We all have cells. Remember, I said we have 6 trillion cells in our body, which many of our cells continually duplicate and divide. And do you think that there's a chance that there might be a flaw in some of those divisions, right? I mean, it would be impossible for 100% of the cells to come out perfectly. And so that's why we all have these cells that are mutated. The difference is those cells that are mutated are taken care of before they become a problem if you have a healthy immune system and you are a healthy person. And, you know, you have cells in your gut lining, your stomach is only one cell layer thick, and those cells divide every 24 to 48 hours. All of our cells don't divide at the same rate, but those divide the most. So we are constantly going through these divisions, and we're constantly getting a quality control problems in certain of these divisions. But that's what becomes cancerous when a cell is mutated. And when we can then get rid of that before it becomes a problem, we never know that it was a problem. So that's how we all have these cells in our body, but not why everybody has cancer. It's only when it progresses and those cells are not taken care of that it becomes a problem. So what I thought we would, with the time we have, what I thought we would do is go down a road that has that is the main focus of this metabolic form of cancer, or cancer as a metabolic disease involving the metabolism of the cell, which is basically the cell's hydroelectric plant, the mitochondria. And we've talked about the mitochondria numerous times in shows, which everybody should have a basic understanding. But let's just revisit, and where I want to take us is I want to take us down and how the mitochondria becomes dysfunctional, and then how that becomes a problem in a cancerous state. So as we all hopefully remember, the mitochondria is our hydrogen-powered plant in each cell that produces the energy to maximize each cell's function. And only when the mitochondria is functioning appropriately that we have enough energy to be healthy. So, you know, how does the mitochondria make energy? Where does it get its raw materials? Well, the reason we eat food and drink water is because those things have hydrogen in them. Remember, the mitochondria is a hydrogen-powered plant. So it runs off of hydrogen. So we get hydrogen from food, from carbohydrates, from proteins, and from fats, as well as water. Because what's water? H2O, hydrogen and oxygen. We take that into our bodies. We shuttle it into the cells. and then we cleave or harvest the hydrogen, and that hydrogen gets put into the front door of the factory, the hydroelectric power plant, which is our mitochondria. That hydrogen then gets processed, and it goes through a factory-like setting until it gets to the last piece of equipment on the conveyor belt. Everything gets packaged together, and then out of the back door into the cell where it needs it, you get ATP, which is cellular energy. You get additional water, because water is also made, and you get carbon dioxide. But we're only going to focus on the energy side of things. And so it takes hydrogen to make that cellular energy. Okay, so now we just have to think a little bit about what hydrogen is and where does it come from. It's the most abundant element on the earth, and this is where the story takes a little bit of a turn. Okay, so there is, you guys all know, when somebody has twins, you've got identical twins and you have fraternal twins. When you think of a fraternal twin, those are twins that don't look anything alike, or they're totally different sizes. I'll give you a great example. I have a very good set of friends, twin brothers. One of them was 145 pounds in high school, and he was a running back on the football team. His twin brother was 230 pounds, and he blocked for him. He was the lineman. But they looked nothing alike. You would never even know they were brothers. But one weighed almost twice as much as the other. Okay?
Wow.
So hydrogen actually has a twin, okay, in nature. It has a fraternal twin, and that fraternal twin is called deuterium. So we've mentioned this a little bit in the water show, where you can get water that's what we call deuterium depleted, okay? We didn't explain it too much, but here's the big – this deuterium fraternal twin, the big brother – so hydrogen, let's say hydrogen weighs 150 pounds, which it doesn't, but just for size comparisons.
Just for an analogy.
Deuterium weighs 300 pounds. Deuterium is twice as heavy as its fraternal twin brother, hydrogen. But it acts identical as its smaller twin brother does in the body. And it's found in nature, just like hydrogen is, but not as plentiful. So we look at seawater or ocean water to get our sample from, because that's the most abundant water on the planet. Ocean water, you know, it's H2O. So not only do you have hydrogen atoms in there, but you have deuterium atoms as well. So for every 1 million hydrogens, there are on average 155 deuterium atoms. So not a lot, okay? But the problem being with deuterium is it tries to get into the mix when you eat foods that are higher in deuterium, and we'll go through this, and this is where the problems can arise. When you eat foods that are higher in deuterium, drink water that's higher in deuterium, then that deuterium can get into the mix of the hydroelectric plant, and which is our mitochondria, and that hydroelectric plant is fitted, all the machinery is slotted and fitted for 150-pound hydrogen atoms. It does not accept 300-pound twin brother deuterium atoms, okay? So if or when deuterium gets into that mix, it breaks the equipment in the plant, and it breaks the mitochondrial balance. And when that happens, that is what causes damage to the mitochondria. Okay, and so that is what we have to talk a little bit about, because it is that very deuterium that causes the problem, that breaks the equipment, that then creates a major problem. So, and let's not even talk, so we're talking about cancer today, but this is true for any disease that we come up against. Deuterium gets in the wrong place, and for almost every mitochondrial problem, it's because deuterium gets into the mix. And here's the interesting thing. Deuterium, why is it out there then? Why is it in nature? And why does it enter our body? Well, little side note, deuterium is vitally important to our health. Okay? It's in the right place in the body. Deuterium is vitally important. It has to be in your blood, and it has to be in, you know, we call the cell the big city. Every cell, 6 trillion cells, is a city. In a, around the perimeter, let's say like the Great Wall of China. It's a big wall that goes, you know, through China. Inside that wall is where deuterium is mandatory to be. It lives there. It helps keep the cell wall together, okay? It's almost like glue. And it belongs in the blood because it does other very important things in the blood. So deuterium, I like to look at deuterium as a almost like a hazardous waste, in that if you take a nuclear power plant and, you know, you look at a nuclear reactor and it has uranium in there, radioactive uranium. Now, while it's in that reactor, it's the best thing ever because it's making extremely efficient energy for that plant. But if that uranium rod were in the room that you're currently in now, you'd be in trouble because it would be deadly. And that's how I like to look at deuterium in the human body. It is important to be there, but it has to be in the right place. Okay?
So then I guess the question becomes, so A, how do we get it, or getting too much of it, and how is it getting in the wrong place, or how do we just keep it in the right place?
Right, and that is the trick, and that is the make or break scenario for whether you'll be healthy or not healthy. Okay, so this is and I'll lead you to some resources in the end here. So deuterium, on average, our deuterium level or amount in our body should be about 130 parts per million. Okay, any more than that, then it starts to get stuffed into there's too much, and then it can overflow out of the blood and out of the cell walls, and that's when it can get into the wrong places. So 130 parts per million is kind of where we like to be healthy. Now, how does it get into our body, or what things get deuterium into our body? Okay. Well, it's obviously, I said it's in water. Water has anywhere from 140 to 150 on average parts per million. And when we had our water show, you know, I mentioned deuterium depleted water. And I think the water that won in that contest when we talked about them all was natural spring water. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Natural spring water has the lowest amount of deuterium in it. And that's why I went down that road, you know, knowing that sometime we'd be talking about deuterium. But that natural spring water and deuterium is interesting because it's most abundant at very low latitudes, deserts, or lower lying areas, and it's very it's not as plentiful in higher locations. So natural spring water from mountains has less deuterium than any water on the earth. Okay, so if you're looking to lower your deuterium content, you would want to use natural spring water, preferably from a higher source. A higher altitude, if possible.
Okay.
But are what foods contain deuterium? So here's,
yes.
You know, we always talk about our country. We are addicted to what? Sugar. Right?
Oh, yeah.
Everybody has a glucose problem. Deuterium is in highest abundance in carbohydrates. Okay?
Yeah.
And so basically all carbohydrates, especially simple sugars and processed foods. Okay? So we talk about fake food, right? Fake food has lots of deuterium in it. So that is I'll basically give you the foods that are highest in deuterium. And obviously carbohydrates, especially simple sugars. Even good foods like, you know, potatoes and grains, they all are higher in deuterium. But here's the big shocker, and this is, remember in the water, during the water show, we talked about you probably don't want to drink alkaline water because it first goes through your gut, which is supposed to be acidic, and then everybody, it's kind of counterintuitive because alkaline water is good for you, but it has to go through your gut first, and if you don't make your gut acidic enough, you have digestive issues, and it becomes a problem. So with deuterium in food, here's a big challenge. One of the foods that is the highest in deuterium content is fruit. Okay?
No.
And that's a bit of a that's a bit of a shocker, right? Why is that? What is fruit?
Well,
sugar
it's
and water.
Natural sugar. It is, yes.
It's sugar and water. But here's something I think you guys will appreciate. So and this is the question I then get asked. Well, okay, if God put fruit trees on the earth, why would fruit be so high in deuterium that it will harm us, right? So that's the question. Well, here's the way that I look at it, and this is the way we should look at it. 150 years ago or even 100 years ago, when could you eat fruit?
Off the tree.
When it was in
during
season.
The summer. Yeah.
When it was in season. And when is that usually in season? Usually in the long light cycles, like summer or early fall, right?
Yeah.
So we didn't have supermarkets. You couldn't just go in January and buy a banana back then. If bananas didn't grow in your area, you couldn't eat them. You could only eat the fruit that was in your area, that was local to you, that was in season. So what is common about long light cycles in the summertime? What else can you do when you're outdoors in long light cycles? You make vitamin D, right? You make vitamin D. And vitamin D, so you've got, if you want your fruit, you've got to go out and pick it. And most people were outdoors working the fields back in the day. And so you would go outdoors and pick it, and you would make vitamin D, and vitamin D naturally depletes your body of deuterium, okay? So you can eat fruit as long as it's in season and you are making vitamin D at the same time, or not at the same time, but in the same season, so you are getting a natural depletion while you're putting a little bit more into your system, okay? So now we live in a country, a world, that you can go year-round and buy any kind of fruit you want from anywhere in the world at any time of the year and eat it all year. So that's where you got to be careful, okay? So that will be a big contributor to deuterium in your body if you're not careful. So those are the foods that have the most deuterium. What are the best sources of foods that have less deuterium? Okay, number one is green leafy vegetables. So you guys don't know what photosynthesis is. Photosynthesis is where the sun comes down and it creates it grows a plant, and then we eat the plant. Photosynthesis naturally depletes those plants of deuterium, so they have less deuterium. Now, when it comes to eating meat, if you eat grass-fed, so anything that you put in your mouth that is a product of photosynthesis, that's green and leafy, like grass. So grass-fed products of beef, pasture-raised chickens. If you're going to eat grain-fed, grain is a carbohydrate, right? Grain has a lot of glucose. So you want to eat you want to eat meat products that are grass-fed, more so than grain-fed. Animal fat go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'm glad you bring that up because you always hear about eating grass-fed meats these days over you know, cattle, chickens, pork, whatever, raised off of solely grain. But you think you hear these things mostly because they're tying it into hormones and different things that they inject in the animals to, I guess, A, try to keep them healthy, B, to increase their size. But this puts a whole nother spin on it because you are getting that passed along from the animals, not only from whatever they're being injected with, but now also by what they're eating. And so, you know, to think that you could get the pass along of the carbohydrates through protein, that's, I don't know, my mind's just kind of blown right there.
Right. You basically eat what that animal ate. When you eat the animal, you ate what it ate. Okay? So that's how it goes. And but that's the truth. And so that is something. Also, fish is a great source of deuterium depleted meat. Also, healthy plant based fats like avocado, coconut, olive oil, and nut oils. Those are all much lower in deuterium. Okay, and here so that covers. And I know we're going quick because we only have about 5 minutes left. That covers kind of a combination of foods, right? That I can give you some resources in a minute here. But here's some other things. Our body naturally depletes deuterium if we let it. Okay, remember I said vitamin D helps your body naturally deplete deuterium? But you know what else depletes your body of deuterium? Is sleep. We have to get enough sleep. Our bodies naturally deplete deuterium during sleep. Okay, so when that happens, when you get good sleep, you will deplete your body. If you get a good night's sleep, if you don't get enough sleep, you will have less of a depletion. So it's a constant battle between accumulating deuterium and depleting deuterium. And there is a test that you can do, and I'll put that in. You know, I'll give that to you in a bit, and that tells you how much you're taking in versus how much is in your body versus how much you're depleting. So this is a new science. I shouldn't say it's a new science. It's not new. It's new research that is cutting edge, that is really making a massive headway in treating cancer. And that's where the water comes in. So if you do have a state of cancer already, and let me say this, I'm not saying you don't go down a traditional route. In anything I'm talking about today, you can do in addition to that route, and it will be extremely beneficial and helpful regardless. Okay. So, but let me just go down this road real quick because I know we're short on time. If you have a diagnosis of cancer, from the metabolic side of things, you need to deplete water. I'm sorry, you need to deplete deuterium from your mitochondria because deuterium fertilizer. Sorry?
I said you scared me when you said deplete water. That's bodybuilding community.
Yeah, I know. But there's a story behind that too. We'll get to one day. Deuterium acts as fertilizer because deuterium, the reason it's in your cell walls is when cells divide, a little bit of that deuterium gets put into the division of that cell. So it helps those new cells divide faster. It's like, think of deuterium as fertilizer. That's its purpose. When it's in a mitochondria that is now broken, that mitochondria and that bad cell divide, that's why cancer can get out of control, because while deuterium is in that cancerous cell, it's fertilizer to that cell, and it runs out of control.
Wow.
Even if your immune system identifies – okay, let me take that back. When you have a – so what happens is that fertilizer makes that cell that's running out of control, that cancerous cell, running so fast, it runs faster than normal. So it becomes veiled to your immune system. Your immune system only destroys cells that are not functioning up to par. But this cell is in overdrive because of the deuterium fertilizer in it, okay? So that cell will be veiled to the immune system until